Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The importance of the French in both the settlement and early history of St. Louis is well documented, not only in history books, but also in what remains of the French colonial culture and heritage in the region, once known, of course, as the Illinois Country. But as time threatens architectural remnants of those early days, preservationists are fighting the clock, and with some success. We're talking about it today with Jesse Francis, the cultural site manager for the St. Louis County Department of Parks and Recreation and co-author of Vanishing French Heritage, a complete study of the vertical log homes of the Illinois Country. Jess, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
First, let's explain exactly what is vanishing.
Vanishing means when we go to look at them and try to find them, there's not as many as there used to be. St. Louis would have over 250 at one time. You won't find one now.
You're talking about homes.
Yes, homes.
Buildings. Structures.
Yes, most of them that are left are generally homes. Did a major search for barns and can't find any. If anybody does, let us know. We'd like to see it. So we decided to go around looking at structures that were up to be demolished or in bad shape or what kind of condition they were in. And so we started compiling this as a list of how many French vertical log houses there were left. And it started growing. And we would complain to a fellow by the name of Charles E. Peterson, who's wrote a book on colonial St. Louis, where he documented structures and design and types. And he finally told us one day, shut up, publish a book, or keep your mouth shut and don't be talking about it anymore. Do something or be quiet.
So these buildings should be fairly easy to identify, or?
Or not. There are clues. I always look at the foundation to see what it is. If it's a stone foundation, you know, that's a clue. If the roof has a funny little front porch and a back porch, that's another clue. If it's setting in an area that looks like it could have been there for quite a while, that's another clue. So we kind of look at the outside of the structure because you can't just go up and start pulling siding off.
Let's talk for a moment. A lot of questions are coming to my mind all at once here, but let's talk a little bit about the vertical log construction because I'm guessing not everybody knows what that means. Explain what it is and the significance, really, of that in the construction.
Okay. Well, that's more of a French-style construction technique that you find up and down the Mississippi River. You'll see a little of it in Canada, but they kind of convert where it's horizontal and vertical together. It's called piece or piece, but down in Louisiana and in the middle Mississippi Valley, the earliest construction technique we see is post in the ground. They talk about it, Peterson talks about it in his book, that they would use different logs. They would use mulberry, they would use oak, they would use cedar. The Spanish kept great records, and some of the records would say, well, in 10 years, the oak logs are falling off to the side and the cedars are left. There are four cedar posts in the ground, four houses left in the United States that are posts in the ground. Three of them are in cedar logs, eastern red cedar, and they're still in reasonable condition, and they're all three in St. Genevieve.
Does this give the vertical log home a greater stability or something? And why is it more efficient or better in any way than the other structures?
Well, the post in the ground is something you'd think wouldn't work because you're sticking the logs directly in the dirt.
Yeah.
So how long are they going to last? Well, the thing that made them last is they would incorporate this gallery or basically an umbrella over the top of your house where it would keep the water away from these logs, which caused them to last longer. Besides that, the eastern red cedar termites doesn't like it. It holds up in moisture. Most farmers would use cedar posts for fence posts, so it's the best type of wood to use. So the post in the ground house has existed because of the galleries around it to protect it mostly.
Is this architecture, is this something that is replicating what the way buildings were constructed in France, or is it a modification to deal with conditions here?
It's both. The logs, if you look in France, you find a lot of vertical log timber frame structures. And in Normandy, before World War II and things were blown up, we lost quite a few of them there. But the French vertical logs, they were logs close together. Sometimes they were as close together as what you find here in Missouri. But generally, they were spread a little further apart. They might be a foot, foot and a half apart, where over here, they're less than 6 inches. And so you have lumber here. Over there, you were running out of lumber, so the logs and timber frame had to be spaced further apart because you couldn't get the trees. Here, what did we have during the colonial time of the French? We had more trees than you could ever dream you could ever use. There was an incident in St. Louis after St. Louis was attacked by the British that the captain writes to the governor and says, "Dear sir, we can rebuild the fort, but it won't last very long because there's not a cedar tree of any substantial size within 100 miles of St. Louis."
Wow.
So they'd gobbled them up pretty quick.
You know, I was a little surprised. I think the figure you gave us a couple of moments ago, there were some 250 of these structures in St. Louis County. We generally tend to think of them in places like St. Genevieve and Prairie du Rocher and places like that.
True. The thing that happens is progress. Fortunately for us, we history people that like to save old structures, when St. Louis was growing, developing, and basically the cutoff time, in my opinion, was when the Iron Mountain Railroad went down south and started bringing all the ore up to St. Louis, St. Genevieve kind of slowed down and basically didn't grow. If it doesn't grow and develop, you don't tear down your old houses and build new houses like they did up here in St. Louis. And also the fire of 48, 49 kind of affected the log houses because after that you were not allowed to build them. There were a few that survived after the fire, but they recently done an archaeological dig down by the arch and found this post in the ground remnants of a site. So there's that. There's the old maps that mark out exactly what type of house type it was. So the post in the ground seems to be more prevalent than one would think.
I saw in your book that one of the places cited was White Haven here in St. Louis County, the old Grant, Grant home. I was surprised that that falls into this category.
Well, the kitchen addition falls into that category. The dendrochronology dates about 1838, so it's getting kind of late, but they were still building these vertical logs in the 1870s, which is really bizarre. And the stranger thing about it, they're being built by Germans, not French. So the tradition's carrying on, and that one was added on to the house at a later date, and it's used as the kitchen. It has a basement fireplace and a main floor fireplace, but it's a vertical log building setting inside there, which is what fascinated me about Grant's home. And that's why I actually took a job with the county, because I was going to be the curator there until they passed it off to the national park. So,
well, I remember that there was quite a controversy about White Haven years ago during the Gene McNary years, whether or not that would be restored. Obviously, it was.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, right. What is the renovation process like when you find one of these places? What do you do? Where does it go from the discovery?
Okay. Well, interesting story. I was traveling looking for French barns. That was my paperwork for Southeast Missouri State, and so I was down there working with that. Came up on this house that it looked like they were tearing it down. Mm-hmm. So they built a brand new house. The Wilhauk family built this brand new house in the back. And I thought, well, what normally happens is they tear down the old house because it blocked the view of the common field and all that stuff, so they're going to get rid of this thing. They had the front porch tore off, and it was just propped up, and it looked bad, so I go screaming up there, and they go, we're not tearing it down. We're going to restore it. So I met the architect, who's my co-author here, and they hired me for $3.25 an hour to go to work for them, which I had died and thought I'd gone to heaven, going to get to work on one of the four post-in-the-ground houses. So basically, what you do is you try to figure out what it was. So fortunately for us, we had an archaeologist who dug around trying to prove that this house, the front cover, had a gallery that extended all the way around it. Because you always hear about the French, southern French houses having a gallery or a porch that extended all the way around. And so we found evidence of post molds, which are where the post used to set. And then we found structural evidence in the logs. So once we did that, it was like, okay, it did have a gallery, so that fits. It has the truss system that came. It looks like somebody just picked it up from Europe, brought it over here, and stuck it on top of this log house where the posts go in the ground. So they're beautiful detail. They're very interesting construction techniques. So that one, sometimes they're really easy to read. Because if you look for the points you're looking for, like the gallery all the way around it, how many fireplaces it had in it, there's always some evidence of either the stone foundation in the basement or evidence where the wall's missing because the fireplace used to set in that section of the building. You look at the nails, how old they are, whether they're handmade or whether they're machine cut, and it gives you a time on date. Then you go to the archives and dig through those and see what you can find. Hopefully you'll find a contract where the carpenter says, so-and-so didn't pay me, and I've spent all this time and all this material, and I'm going to sue him. Because down in St. Genevieve, the great thing, there's a lot of lawsuits over everything. So sometimes you find things like that, or you might stumble into an abstract office and see a photograph of it before the fireplace fell off the side, which I did one winter because it was too cold to do anything else. So I walk in and there it is. So sometimes it's a little luck on exactly how to interpret it.
It sounds like it would be a fairly expensive process to bring it back.
I work cheap. The architect
$3 an hour, right?
Yeah, that's right. The architect basically gave his time. Mm-hmm. The archaeologist, I think, was the only fellow paying, and the Wilhauks were very much wanting to preserve this Beckett-Rabolle house. So We took it back. There was no electricity added or anything like that. So we put the hips on it. We replaced part of the truss system. And actually, some of the stuff's fairly cheap. The rafters on top of the oak truss system are river willow.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a farmer that has river willow, they'll give them to you.
Well, people listening to this, if they're living in an old place, mm-hmm. what do they look for? I mean, neophytes, people who don't know architecture, don't know this particular brand of architecture, what should they look for to see if they're living in one of these places?
Well, I would go to the basement, which is what I always, when I knock on a stranger's door, I ask to go in their basement, and they ask me what kind of salesman I am. And when I tell them I'm not, I'm just interested in looking at the structure, go in the basement, look at the beams, see if the flooring is, the beams are log, if they're hewn or round, and then there'll be the bottom on a post in a ground house. It's obvious because you're going to see logs going directly in the ground. If it's a post on seal where they have a stone foundation, it's like a timber frame or a log house that you'll see the bottom, but then you'll see all these verticals sticking up on top of it. So that's the easy read. And if you go in the attic and you happen to find one of these old truss systems, which there's a few of those left yet, you'll automatically know exactly
what would differentiate the old truss from the new, aside from the fact that willow is used.
Okay, willows are the rafters, but the truss system, the heavy truss system, which basically they brought over with them from France, it held a thatched roof. Thatched roof could be a foot and a half thick, and if it gets wet, it gets heavy. So you have to have enough weight, enough truss system to support that. So they still use that truss system where it's mortise and tendon in, pegged in place, has a king post truss coming out, and some of them will go all the way through the roof, so you see something sticking out about 6 inches above the roof line, which you only see that in a restored house. You don't see that in a rehabbed house because they don't do that. But it's that heavy truss system, and then they put the willows on it to put the sheeting boards for the shingles.
You're making it sound to me a little bit like all of these places will look pretty much the same, but I've been with your book, and they don't look
No, they don't. It's like if sometime I was in a house about 5 years ago in Ladue. Beautiful, wonderful house. And you get into the middle of it, and it's a horizontal log house. So sometimes through the history and the development of the place, you wouldn't really recognize that there's a French vertical log house in the ones in St. Some of them that we picked up and moved. You never knew there was a French vertical log house because it was surrounded by other additions.
Sure, because they've been added onto over the generations.
Yeah. As the family grows, the house grows.
Sure. What do these homes and these buildings tell us about the original settlers, the people who built them?
Well, I work out of Faust Park. I have Governor Bates' house out there. Governor Bates was a Virginian. He comes out and he says, the territory will never amount to anything until we Americans come, because the French are accustomed to the fiddle in the chase. So they're party people, he says. And I'm going, hold it. Look at these buildings, how detailed, how it really takes engineering and some type of architectural thought process to build these things. These people were just not running up and down having parties all the time. They were working. And besides that, they were here way before Daniel Boone crossed over the Appalachians and living here for quite some time and traveling and hunting and lead mining. And so they were not what he called lazy people.
You know, think of how the country might be different today had a few things, if Napoleon hadn't run out of money, for instance.
True.
So that the Louisiana Purchase was effective. We might all be speaking French.
That's true. We might be.
How about their getting along with the others, with the Native Americans who were here, ultimately the Spanish or the Americans? I mean, there was quite a potpourri of groups, nationalities, ethnicities at that time.
True. The French seemed to get along with everybody. There was an incident at Minamot in 1776, but all in all, there wasn't a whole lot. There's a wonderful little story about this French wedding party getting in. One of the members did something wrong to the Osage, and they caught him outside of town and took everything they owned, and I do mean everything. So they walked back into town. They were going to Potosi for a wedding, and they didn't make it. It didn't kill them. They just took everything they owned, and they walked back into town. Hmm. The common deal was if the Osage Indians take a horse that they think you don't need, you can chase them to the city limits, and you might want to stop because then you're outnumbered. Hmm. So kind of not a bad deal. They fur traded with them. They married with them. They lived among them, so it's a more peaceful. There wasn't any major wars between the Native Americans and the French.
Yeah, I wonder why they seem to get along so much better with the natives, if you will, than some of the other groups.
Well, we English are a little pushy. And when we start, it's like Frederick Bates' statement about, well, we can get this going and we'll get the Americans in here, we'll get this. Yeah. And we're a little pushier than the French might. They'll live amongst you, and as long as they can plant and do what they want, they're not going to say, I want every acre you own and I'm going to take it from you or you live on. And so that's why Shoto could get along with the Osage and get a gift of land from the Osage to him.
But how about the Americans who ultimately came in, those being the people from the eastern part of the United
True.
States as they emigrated this way?
Not a good thing. Development of the culture and the variations of Americans, I own this. Native Americans, I don't own this. I live here. But I live here, and you can't come in and start doing things to this mm-hmm. because this is where I hunt, this is how I live. If you encroach upon that, then we're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. The Osage were gotten a bit of a trouble when Lewis and Clark, when Clark came here and Frederick Bates in 1807 and then Lewis, the Osage were upset because the treaty they got, they didn't think was fair that the other tribes got a better deal. So there's some animosity that started to develop. And then we like to push people out.
Is that what we did to the French?
Well, we kind of outnumbered them is what we did to the French. Uh-huh. Americans started coming over. Daniel Boone, Moses Austin, John T. Smith, some real characters back in the olden days that make today's headlines look kind of boring sometimes.
Going back to the architecture, is there anything that they brought through their architecture and their techniques that were emulated by those who followed them?
Well, I can just say there's a few of the French log, and basically they would convert to timber frame to this, I don't know, it might be a reach to say it went from vertical logs to balloon frame construction, so mm-hmm. I don't think I want to go there, but no, the porches, everybody had galleries and porches, and that's why when the Germans come in, you have to really look at the house to see whether it's a vertical log house or a horizontal log house.
They're so fond of those porches. I mean, it's visible in everything that I've seen in your book, just about everything in any way. That must be a clue to a lifestyle as well.
Well, if you think about it, what's a porch do? It protects your building. It also gives you a shade and a good place to work that you're out of the weather. The thing it does with these vertical log buildings is when the water runs down, if you didn't have that gallery, the water would run down between your logs, and if you have mud and straw infill, it's going to wash it out. A horizontal log will take the weather a little bit better, but as soon as they figured it out, the pioneers would side their building, and that's why a lot of logs are covered up with siding, and that's why they're still here, because they protected them. But that gallery protected your structure. And then it kept it cooler. The Becquerel Bowl never had a ceiling in it, so it was a wide-open airspace, so the air flowed through. And a southern-style house, that's great, because you've got all that airflow going through, circulating through your house, which makes it cooler in the summertime. In the wintertime, they would stack straw or hay up in the attic and actually create a box of insulation. So.
Fairly ingenious,
yes,
you would have to say.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. Give us a couple of examples. You've mentioned a few, but for folks who are in our immediate listening area here, where can they go best that's not so far away to see some examples of what we're talking about?
Okay, well, you could go across the river to Cahokia. There's the Cahokia Courthouse that had been picked up and moved three different times and kind of shrunken and reconstructed. But there's the Holy Family Church that's a jewel. And then in Dupo, there is a house that we worked on in 93 that is a vertical log house with multiple fireplaces with a gallery only on the front and the back, which would be close. Or you could go to St. Genevieve. There's one house in particular that jumps out, and that's the Amro House. And when we were looking on that, we found out that it probably had a thatched roof at one time. Putting a thatched roof on today is not a thing you want to do. But back then, the first roofing system on that house was a thatched roof.
You mentioned Becquerel-Ribeau. What makes that different?
It's one of the post-in-the-ground houses. It's more of a common man. He's the smallest. It's the smallest lot of the post-in-the-ground houses. The others are huge. The Amro House is probably another 15, 20 feet longer than it. And wider. The Beauvais House is also a large house by a wealthy fellow. So the Becquerel Bowl is kind of a nice-sized folk house that would be the most common structure.
When you say a large house, what sort of square footage might we be talking
about?
Well,
it's about the Amro House is somewhere around 17 by 20, well, or 72, 72 feet by 20.
about 1,400 square right. feet, a little bit more than right. that, which is probably an average size of a residence today.
Right. The Becker Bowl is like 36 by 18.
So. Well, it fits right in with basically what we're doing today. You mentioned large structures. Time is beginning to get away, and you also mentioned a church. Were there many of those constructed in this manner?
The Holy Family Church is a post on, so it has a stone foundation, sets like that. The St. Charles Borromeo Church, which they're celebrating their 250th anniversary, about 5-6 years ago, we reconstructed that. So it's over in St. Charles, so you can go look at a smaller cut down version because we had a lot, only size. But it was a cedar post in the ground church, dated to 1792.
And what about size? I mean, a church is generally bigger than a residence.
True. And actually, the largest of all the buildings would be the Holy Family Church in Cahokia. And it's at least 72, if not maybe 85 feet long.
Wonder how long it took to build these things.
It takes quite a while. Just doing the little church in St. Charles, I would work evenings and weekends, and it took a lot of hours to do that. And you have to hew the logs, you have to cut the logs, you have to get them there. Now, they used horses and mules and things like that, where we now use dump trucks and trucks and cranes and things. So it's a little different.
Only about 30 seconds left. For people who think they might be onto something where they live, how can they get in touch and what should they do?
Well, come out to Faust Park and say, Jesse, I found a French vertical log house. We're always looking for more, and we know hopefully down the road this book's used for scholarships, so we donate the money to a scholarship. And the great thing about it is it needs to grow. As Charles Peterson said, either fix it or just stop talking about it. So it's going to be added on to, we hope.
We will put information on our website how to get in touch. The name of the book we've been talking about is Vanishing French Heritage, A Complete Study of the Vertical Log Homes of the Illinois Country. Jesse, thank you so much. Jesse Francis, our guest.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good luck. Hope you get some business out of this conversation. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.